Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. We have two wonderful poets with us today, Katie Bowens and Paul Eben Camp. And let everybody know, too, that tomorrow night we're doing a celebration of Michael Gizzi's collected poems that's done on Market Street in Goff at the Green Arcade, 7 p.m. 22 people will be reading poems from that book, something like that. It's one of those things. Katie's involved. Brandon Brown is involved. I don't know who else in the room might be. It'll be a wonderful tribute to a really wonderful man and poet, Michael Gizzi. We've decided that Katie Bowens will start by reading today. And Katie's book is called Dear Alain. It came out from Tender Buttons Press late last year. Very exciting arrival on the scene of contemporary poetry. Some of us got a preview about 2 years ago when she came out for the first East Bay Poetry Summit. And there was a wonderful, wonderful reading from the Dear Alain letters. They are letters to the French philosopher Alain Badiou, but I'll let Katie tell you that story. The book has an amazing, wonderful blurb from Slavoj Žižek, "This book should be banished," continuing that eternal war between the poets and the philosophers. What else? There was an earlier edition of this book from Summer BF Press, which Katie says she would probably read some from. Facsimiles of the original letters, in a sense, and beautiful in an envelope and published over in Oakland. I think that's it. Let's greet Katie. She's here from New York City. Wonderful to have her.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. It's really nice to be here. I love the Bay. I see so many nice faces. Hi, Tinker. Tinker is my Facebook friend. Yeah, it's really nice to be here. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Paul, for reading with me. I have, yes, I'm reading also Saturday at Woolsey Heights, so come on out if you're there for that, or Michael Gizzi tomorrow will be wonderful. I was thinking, you know, obviously I'll read a little bit from Dear Alain, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but I don't know, I just was thinking, as we tend to do, right, because we're people who think, and I was thinking back to one of my favorite pieces of writing. I think it just pops into my head every once in a while, and I thought I would share it with you. So this is just like 2 pages on the necessity of loneliness by one of my favorite writers in the world. His name is Gao Xingjian, and he grew up in Beijing, and he was a playwright and a novelist there, but he was kicked out of the country, really, because it was right after the Cultural Revolution when he was publishing, and they didn't like anything that was avant-garde, anything that was abstract, and so he left and went to France, and he's got a couple of novels, and I think it was in 2002 he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Chinese government denies that Gao Xingjian is the first Chinese person to win the Nobel Prize. but I love this guy's work, and hopefully you'll see why in a second. This feeling of loneliness, which stems from self-love, can arouse self-pity or lead to conceitedness. It can even turn into unbridled impetuousness. If concern for the external world is lost, this feeling can become a tangled mass in the heart and turn into an affliction that gives rise to arrogance and bigotry. To derive interest from loneliness instead of allowing it to become an affliction, one must examine both what is external and what is internal. In other words, use another eye to calmly observe the outside world as well as one's own inner world. This third eye, which can transcend the limitations of oneself, is what is known as consciousness, or even wisdom. However, wisdom or consciousness comes also with distance. In other words, with taking a step back. One requires a certain distance to be able to see clearly and make accurate judgments about people and events. Loneliness is not merely an aesthetic judgment, because it can also turn into a drive. since it is premised on affirming an individual's worth. It contributes to motivating the individual to go forth and overcome difficulties or pursue a particular goal. It is only when a child is alone that he starts to become an adult, and it is only when a person is alone that he can achieve maturity. Loneliness is essential for adults. It encourages independence, and needless to say, the ability to endure loneliness is indispensable for strengthening character within social situations. It is bad not to have this vital distance between the individual and others, to be running into people all the time, either within a family or within some other collective unit, maybe on Facebook. I added that. Moreover, coexistence requires magnanimity and understanding, and these depend on our having adequate space between ourselves and others. To an even greater extent, loneliness is a prerequisite for freedom. Freedom depends on the ability to reflect, and reflection can only begin when one is alone. The world does not consist only of dualities, right or wrong, condoning or opposing, revolutionary or reactionary, progressive or conservative, politically correct or politically incorrect. Before making a choice, there is no harm in hesitating and leaving a little room for independent reflection. When ideologies, trends in thinking, fashions, or crazes are all embracing, it is being lonely that affirms the individual's freedom. In the bustling world of today, the propaganda of the mass media is all pervasive, and if at times an individual wants to listen to the voice of his heart, he will need the support of this feeling of loneliness. As long as it does not turn into an ailment, loneliness is necessary for the individual to establish himself and to achieve things. I thank all of you here today at this illustrious gathering for patiently listening to me talk about the insights that I have gained from my experiences. I am sure that all of you, too, have had such insights.
Isn't that lovely? Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I love that guy. Okay. So this is like less Taoist, maybe, in tonality. I wrote this this book, Dear Alain, and it's really what it is it's a critique of Western philosophy in the form of love letters of a poet to a philosopher. So there's a metaphor here for like what if poetry is undefined and chaos and something beyond definitions or inventing new definitions of language, then what does the poet say to the philosopher who is like structure and rigidity and the ultimately so invested in definitions, right? So what did they talk about? So that was the premise for this, and I guess you'll see what happens. I found out yesterday Alain and I will do an event in December, and I'm really nervous. He's going to do a lecture on the book. I was like, okay. All right. And I'm going to read from the book. Okay. Dear Alain, there, got it, round two. Multiplicity, said Badieu. You motherfucker stole my brain, except you're wrong, still working in Euclid's plane. Enlightenment is the real projective, where parallel lines meet at the horizon and a line is a circle. It's true that the Abrahamic religions have a problem with historicity and crusades. Somebody's always got to be right before and in order to get to God. Buddha knows the line is really a circle at the horizon anyway, where we all should strive to dwell. The point, it's a line. The line, it's a circle. The circle, it's a flower. That point Derrida collapsed in the derivatives market? Don't worry about it. We'll fix it when we wake up. Cat life number 27. Ladybug reincarnate. That's like, so, like if I met a guy at a bar and I really kind of wanted to flirt with him, I think that's what I would start with. Dear Alain, the isolated hysteria of city dwelling. Universal truth, you're crying alone. You're crying alone, and there's something wrong here. Don't make sense to go bowling alone. No bone cold enough for a life like that. We got to get some meatloaf and gravy on this table. Live humans creaking in the chairs, laughter cracking up the atmosphere. Bring your tears here. Bring them dripping down your nose, long and heavy. We'll cook those boys to the corners with friendship sweet and mighty. Laughter tears are good for wrinkles. Wink. Okay. Dear Alan, I think when you talk about multiplicity, Alan, really didn't a guy named Hart write that 10 years back? I guess he was riffing on you, but it led him to classicism. Chaos is the original sin we've been running from all our architectural lives. Why are we spending our energy rediscovering this? Why does this constitute a form we want to represent? Is it that we never knew how bad it could be until Hitler? Maybe we didn't know how much pain dissolves brick. I see this as the real problem. Dear Alan, I want to meet you very badly and write you love poems. I want to know where you put love in your schema, if you believe in it. Did you ever read Zamyatin's We? It's what Orwell based 1984 on. He got kicked out of Russia before it was Bolshevik. But Zamyatin foretold a world where everything was algebra, and the only thing to wake up the creativity, the poetry pole you juxtapose like math, the Dionysus to your linear Apollo. Well, let's just say Dionysus didn't dance without Venus. Do you think Venus exists? You must believe in the undefined, the poetry that beds the data when it's young and vomiting on the floor before it grows into a tall and strong polynomial chain. You said you did. Back to that Hart guy, he ended up talking about love too, and I think that's where his career ended. Nobody wants to listen to the mushy stuff. But I gotta tell you, my friend Chad B said it best. I don't care if you're the tiniest, whiniest, most pampered cheerleader, or the hoodest, hardest, most jock football player. Everybody got somebody, put them fetal in the kitchen, make them batshit crazy. That's a true quote. My friend Chad B, you guys should meet him. He's cool. Is this the constant in the incompleteness theorem? Desire? I hate that word. What about capital L love? Should I just ask somebody to write me a prescription and forget about it? I feel like it's good to read this at a university because I was really like just anyway. Dear Alan, right. I recognize that I am being sassy, immature, and superficial. However, it seems that love poems are out of style. I'm still terribly upset about that. I honestly would like to know what you think, Monsieur Badieu. Also, I read your essay on Mallarmé. It seems clear that you are a philosopher and not a poet. I am deeply grateful you write of poetry at all. Your analysis, its geometry, is well mapped. Perhaps I wish to go a bit further outside the language of being event and say more simply, poetry is the undefinable. I think it should be off the map entirely. I think you would agree if you envision it in terms of an XY coordinate axis, but I must point out my logical inconsistency. Where is poetry if it does not exist on the plane? A strong argument for a third dimension. Emotions, maybe. The soul, magic, stuff like that. Or, back to classical Euclid, it would be very poetic to say, poetry is the origin. Exactly 00. I like that. Poetry at the origin, capital O. How orgasmic. Dear Alan, oh, Mr. Badieu, how lovely to argue with you. Thank you dearly, and I look forward to fucking you again soon. Really, I am a big prude. I rarely fuck in public. Please take this as a token of my deepest admiration and affection. Next time, in French. And in French fashion, now that I have told you all the things I don't like about you, we can be friends. I shall try to proceed in pure devotion to all your most finest accomplishments. Yours, Katie. Dear Alan, forgive me. Burn these letters. I forgot to write par avion. Perhaps they will not arrive. I dearly hope so. Burn them, please. I will be a better student. I will be more serious. Do not forsake me. Yours, Katie. Dear Alan, I thought all day of what I would write you. Now I can merely see my fingers typing at the keys. Everything escapes me. My mind thinks of so many intimate things to tell you. What I think of your work, how I feel, the images, and the selflessness. When I think of writing for the entire of existence, of humanity, I am in church with a vow to serious straight eyes, concentration, a heavy heart, and good posture. It terrifies me and makes me cry. How do you do it? Love, Katie. Dear Alan, if it is the continuation of the canon that allows you to make incremental progress in the works of philosophy, then how do you not wonder if the canon has made a mistake? I do not mean your discussions with Derrida or Heidegger. I wonder if we are not profoundly mistaken. You discuss life as if set theory could approach it. I admire the limitlessness of your approach in that calculus has no limit in having a limit, but politics, I fear we are so near the end that philosophy is merely a performative architecture rather than the salvation we need. I mean, possibly Red Scare, but isn't global warming real? Do I confuse truth with answers and a way to think with a way to live? Perhaps I should compartmentalize you in the philosophy division and not ask you questions of basic moral existence. Is this too much to ask? But you said you do not like specialization. Should I look in the self-help section? I cannot help but consider you from the view of the ignorant, for I sense I am completely blind. I would say we are completely blind, but to speak beyond any other than myself seems a treason. Then again, I wish with all my ego to say everything is X. Is it the history or the graph that makes it easier for you? These words, being an event, they seem a trick of logic which remove responsibility. Everything is timeless before death, unless you consider pregnancy. Truly, Katie. Dear Alan, I thought being with you openly, brazenly, could be so many things. I thought you would understand me. I thought I could be naked before you. There would be profundity and confession. You see, as poets, we dance. I could say to you, now, against the wall, but I've tried this before and it doesn't work as well as you'd think. So we play a game, an artifice, a style, a form to get that E.E. Cummings moment in the poem. I wondered if I could be myself for you and be quite serious and earnest with all my passion because you were serious and earnest, but perhaps we amount to giggles because we can't bear our wretched infinite. Oh dear, I am torn between my artifice and intimacy. Be patient with me. I wish at once to ease your tired ears, but also to put light to those deepest things we never say aloud, perhaps the things that matter most. When tomorrow becomes yesterday and tomorrow becomes eternity, when the soul with the soul goes way beyond. Yours, Katie. That's a line from Nina Simone's 22nd Century, which I advise everyone listen to. Dear Alan, forgive me. It was the whiskey last night. I speak too quickly and with too little thought. I will be more serious, as clear as a winter landscape for you. Alan, please write soon. Your silence has always depressed me. Or perhaps it is that thinking like a philosopher may be suicidal. You metal jungle gym. As always, you are the eternal object of my being, and I hope to pass an event with you soon. Yours, Katie. Affair number one. Dear Julian, meet me in Rat Alley by the old mattress. The Four Seasons is for criminals. In code, Katya. That's Julian Assange. Dear Alan, philosophers and poets, we're both trying to reach God. You the form, we the content. You the throne, we the light. Thoughtfully, Katie. Okay, two more. Dear Alan, I'm sick from being serious. I'm sick of this fucking shit. Speaking to you on your terms and your vocabulary requires a tired precision I loathe. I like monkeys and raspberries and autumn squash cooked for 1 hour at 350 degrees Fahrenheit with a glaze of 2 tablespoons butter, agave nectar, and Dijon mustard, lightly speckled with pepper. I don't mean the cooking channel. I mean John Coltrane for lovers on repeat because it's Sunday, the holiday of the sun regime from 300 BC when the thrones met the saints and the prophets. I mean the Roman emperors bent the Christian details to gain the wealth of the people's love of astrologers, the first empirical data. These days, Pfizer does a 6-week trial, and we call it truth, but 700 years, the Sumerians documented the position of Saturn and the price of wheat, and it's Habernacle to us. What on earth do you put faith in, my dear? I would say beyond earth, but I presume you are a dialectical materialist like your good Marxist politics. As my dear French father said, you think you are an atheist, but everyone has faith in something, be it electricity or that God does not exist. That might be slightly holistic for your set theory, which holistically avoids the holistic, but I'll gladly hear the counterexample. Where was your tipping point for belief? I suppose it was years of thought, but there must be a fall off the seesaw you want to tell me about. I wonder, why a doctrine? Even if you win history, that unattainable virgin, you'll spend eternity with the maggots, the fact-mongers typing away at your flesh. I suppose you don't mind contributing to humanity just a bone left, a truism in the end. But would it have been any different otherwise? Personally, I'm leaving only ashes, burnt pages, not deconstruction, pure flame. You philosophers are made of metal, but I am earth, water, fire, the Triskelion, horned and abandoned. Who wants the power of the name if it's only to claim your own bullseye? Already got it plenty. Darts. Doing just fine. Well, it's sassy time tonight. Yes, agreed. Your logic's got me all bunched like a rolled sleeve. It's fine enough on its own, but against my wrinkles and veins and memories, something else has to course against the grain. There's so many of you arguing your details since the beginning of time. Screw it. I want a literary song. Unwind the arguments because I was never that great at compartments, and when I was, it didn't get me laid. Philosophy is all moral consequence in politics, real time, miserably. Your set theory has no eye, so Houdini, but subject-object event gets back to the sun eventually. You hide in math, I hide in the moon, and I only ask you this. If e to the negative 2 pi I contains all the numbers we have never seen but that make the circle, the financial world, and the imaginary realm all come together to equal one, then you must believe in things we cannot see or touch or feel, but only believe. All the artists I know this. Closest thing I've got to reason is the voice in my head. None of us can see that. Here's the voice in my head. Here it is. I made it prettier for you, but it's what I think. I guess the difference between you and me is that I only trade my voice with you. Maybe you've spent all those years making your voice for everyone as round and flat and true as everything. Oh, a metaphor about our work. I just wish I could hear your voice. The one in your head. Yours. Katie.
I think we'll end there.